This is Audible.
Scholastic Audiobooks presents The Invention of Hugo Cabré by Brian Selznick. Read for you by Jeff Woodman.
A brief introduction. My name is Professor H. Alco Frisbas. And the story I am about to share with you takes place in 1931 under the roofs of Paris. Here, you will meet a boy named Hugo Cabré, who once, long ago, discovered a mysterious drawing that changed his life forever. But before we begin, I want you to picture yourself sitting in the darkness, like the beginning of a movie. On screen, the sun will soon rise, and you will find yourself zooming toward a train station in the middle of the city. You will rush through the doors into a crowded lobby. You will eventually spot a boy amid the crowd, and he will start to move through the train station. Follow him, because this is Hugo Cabré. His head is full of secrets, and he's waiting for his story to begin. Part 1. Chapter 1. The Thief. From his perch behind the clock, Hugo could see everything. He rubbed his fingers nervously against the small notebook in his pocket and told himself to be patient. The old man in the toy booth was arguing with the girl. She was about Hugo's age, and he often saw her go into the booth with a book under her arm and disappear behind the counter. The old man looked agitated today. Had he figured out some of his toys were missing? Well, there was nothing to be done about that now. Hugo needed the toys. The old man and the girl argued some more, and finally she closed her book and ran off. Thankfully, within moments, the old man had crossed his arms in front of him and closed his eyes. Hugo crept through the walls, came out through an air vent, and hurried down the hall until he reached the toy booth. Nervously, he rubbed the notebook one last time, then cautiously lowered his hand around the wind-up toy he wanted. But suddenly, there was a movement from inside the booth, and the sleeping old man sprang to life. Before Hugo could run, the old man grabbed his arm. The little blue wind-up mouse Hugo had taken fell from his hands, skidded across the counter, and landed on the floor with a crack. "Thief! Thief!" the old man yelled down the empty hallway. "Someone call the station inspector!" At the mention of the station inspector, Hugo panicked. He twisted and tried to get away, but the old man pulled hard on his arm and wouldn't let go. "I finally caught you, now empty your pockets!" Hugo growled like a dog. He was furious with himself for being caught. The old man squeezed tighter until Hugo was practically standing on his toes. "You're hurting me! Empty your pockets!" Reluctantly, one by one, Hugo pulled out dozens of objects, screws and nails and bits of metal, gears and crumpled playing cards, tiny pieces of clockworks, cogs and wheels. He pulled out a crushed box of matches and some small candles.
"You have one more pocket to go," the old man said.
"There's nothing in it."
"Then turn it inside out."
"I don't have anything of yours. Let me go."
"Where is the station inspector?"
the old man yelled down the hallway again.
"Why is he never around when he is needed?"
If the station inspector in his green uniform appeared at the end of the hallway, Hugo knew everything would be over. The boy struggled against the old man, but it was no use. Finally, his hand trembling, Hugo reached into his pocket and pulled out his small, battered cardboard notebook. The cover had been rubbed smooth. Still holding onto the boy's arm, the old man snatched the notebook away, set it down out of Hugo's reach, opened it, and flipped through the pages. One page caught the old man's eye.
"Give that back to me! It's mine!" cried Hugo.
"Ghosts," the old man muttered to himself. "I knew they would find me here eventually."
He closed the notebook. The expression on his face changed rapidly from fear to sadness to anger.
"Who are you, boy? Did you draw these pictures?"
Hugo didn't answer him.
"I said, did you draw these pictures?"
Hugo growled again and spit on the floor.
"Who did you steal this notebook from?"
"I didn't steal it."
The old man grunted, and with a push, he finally let go of Hugo's arm.
"Leave me alone, then. Stay away from me and my toy booth."
Hugo rubbed his arm and stepped backward, accidentally crushing the wind-up mouse he had dropped. The old man shuddered at the sound of the breaking toy. Hugo picked up the broken pieces and placed them on the counter.
"I can't leave without my notebook."
"It is no longer your notebook. It is mine, and I will do with it what I want."
The old man waved Hugo's box of matches in the air.
"Perhaps I will burn it."
"No!"
The old man collected the contents of Hugo's pockets, including the notebook. He placed them in a handkerchief, tied it up, and covered it with his hands.
"Then tell me about the drawings. Who did them?"
Hugo said nothing. The old man slammed a fist down on the counter, shaking all the toys.
"Get out of here, you little thief!"
"You're the thief!"
Hugo yelled as he turned and ran off. The old man yelled something after him, but all Hugo heard was the clicking of his own shoes echoing off the station walls. Chapter 2. The Clocks. Hugo ran down the hallway and disappeared back inside the metal vent in the wall. He paused for a moment. The air was cool and damp. A few dim light bulbs provided a tiny bit of illumination inside the dark passageways. Hugo opened the door and let himself inside. Above the ceiling of the main waiting area was a cluster of secret apartments that had been built for the people who ran the train station years ago. Most of them had long been abandoned. Only one was still in use. Some sunlight filtered through the dirty skylight. Hugo looked at the rows and rows of jars filled with pieces from all the toys he had stolen from the toy booth over the past few months. The jars sat on shelves made from scavenged planks he had found inside the walls of the station. Under his rickety bed lay a pile of Hugo's drawings. His deck of cards rested on a dusty trunk in the middle of the room. Nearby, on a small table, was a stack of envelopes, his uncle's uncashed paychecks, accumulating week by week. Hugo wiped his eyes and picked up his bucket of tools. He stuffed some more matches and candles into his pockets and set to work. As usual, Hugo headed first to the big glass clocks on the roof because they were the hardest to reach. They were like huge round windows and looked out over the city, one facing north and one facing south. Hugo had to climb up a long, dark staircase and slither through an opening in the ceiling at the top of a ladder to get inside them. During the day, his eyes always stung for a few moments from the flood of light through the glass. The motors and gears of these clocks were the biggest in the station, and Hugo was often afraid that his hand was going to get caught. In the corner of the room, attached by ropes, hung huge weights that kept the clocks running. He checked the time on the glass clocks against the time on his uncle's railroad watch, which he kept with his tools and wound diligently every morning. He then took a moment to carefully look the whole mechanism over and added a few drops of oil to each gear shaft from a little oil can in his kit. Hugo's head tilted slightly to the side as he listened to the beat of the clock, waiting until he was sure the machine was running correctly. Once he had finished with the clocks on the roof, he climbed down the ladder and the long staircase. Back inside the dark passageways, he checked the other clocks in the station, all of which were made of brass and could be maintained from inside the walls. Hugo lit his candles to help him see and began with the clock that overlooked the ticket booths. This clock, like all the others, had weights too, but much smaller ones, which disappeared into the floor. Hugo attached a crank to the back of the clock and, using all of his strength, turned it as far as it would go. Hugo then made sure the gears and levers were moving accurately, and he checked that the time was correct on the miniature dial built into the back of the clockworks. Next, he moved through the hidden passageways to the ring of clocks around the train platforms, and then to the backs of the smaller clocks that faced the interior offices, including the station inspectors. Looking through the numbers, Hugo could see the station inspector's desk, and in the corner of the office, the cage of a small jail cell that sat waiting for any criminals caught in the station. Hugo had seen men and women locked up in there, and a few times he had even seen boys no older than himself in the cell, their eyes red from crying. Eventually, these people were taken away, and Hugo never saw them again. From the offices, Hugo followed a long hidden tunnel to the back of the clock opposite the old man's toy booth. He wished he could avoid this clock, but he knew he couldn't skip any of them. Peering out through the numbers, Hugo spied the old man again, alone in his toy booth at the end of the hallway, looking through the pages of Hugo's notebook. Hugo wanted to scream out, but he didn't. He oiled the clock and listened to it carefully. He could tell it wouldn't need to be wound for another day or two, so Hugo kept going, until all 27 clocks in the station had been attended to, just the way his uncle had taught him. Chapter 3. Snowfall. The old man slowly shuffled to the front of the toy booth. He was beginning to close up shop, lowering the front wooden grate when Hugo approached him from behind. Hugo knew how to walk silently, but he let his feet fall loudly on the tiles to let the old man know he was there.
"Pick up your feet, boy."
The old man glanced over his shoulder.
"I hate the sound of shoe heels clicking on the floor."
The old man continued to close the grate and lock it. The halls of the station were nearly empty. Hugo knew the station inspector would be making his evening rounds at the other end of the station, and Hugo figured he had a few minutes before he showed up here. The old man finished closing up and double-checked the lock on his booth.
"What is your name, boy?"
Hugo hesitated. He was going to lie, but then, for some reason, he said his real name.
"Hugo. Hugo Cabret."
"Listen to me, Hugo Cabret. I told you to stay away from me. I will drag you to the station inspector's office and lock you up myself if I see you again. Do you understand what I am saying?"
"Give me back my notebook!"
"I am going home to burn your notebook."
With that, the old man glanced quickly at the clock across from the toy booth and headed out under the great iron ribs of the train station. He emerged through the golden doors into the dark streets of Paris. It was the end of winter, and a light snow had begun to fall. Hugo watched him go. It had been a very long time since Hugo had left the train station, and he wasn't dressed for winter, but within moments he burst through the doors.
"You can't burn my notebook," he shouted to the old man.
"I can,"
came the answer. Hugo wanted to tackle him, to knock him to the ground and take back his notebook, but he didn't think he was big enough. And besides, the old man was strong. Hugo's arm still ached from where he had been grabbed earlier.
"Stop clicking the street with your heels," the old man hissed through his teeth. "And don't make me say it again."
He shook his head and adjusted his hat. Then quietly, he said to himself,
"I hope the snow covers everything so all the footsteps are silenced and the whole city can be at peace."
They soon arrived at a decrepit apartment building across from the graveyard. The whole building seemed to lean slightly to the side. Ivy had once covered the walls, but it had been torn away, leaving long, interlocking scars in the cracked paint. The old man opened the chipped green door with a large key. Turning back to Hugo, he said,
"Don't you know that the sound of clicking boot heels can summon ghosts? Do you want to be followed by ghosts?"
The old man stepped quickly inside and slammed the door behind him. Chapter 4. The Window. Hugo stood in the dark outside the old man's apartment building. He wiped the snowflakes from his eyelashes and fiddled with the dirty buttons on the front of his thin jacket, rubbing them between his fingers the way he had rubbed the cover of his notebook. Hugo picked up a stone from the street and threw it at one of the windows. The curtains parted. A girl looked out. Hugo thought for a second that he had hit the wrong window, but then he recognized the girl. It was the girl from the toy booth. Hugo was about to yell to her, but she put a finger to her lips and motioned for him to wait there. The curtains closed again. Hugo shivered in the cold, and in a few minutes the girl appeared from behind the building and ran over to him.
"Who are you?" she asked. "Your grandfather stole my notebook. I have to get it back before he burns it."
"Papa George isn't my grandfather," said the girl, "and he isn't a thief. You are."
"No, I'm not. I saw you. How could you have seen me? The old man sent you away before I came to the booth."
"So you were spying on me, too. Well, then we're even."
Hugo looked at the girl curiously.
"Let me inside."
"I can't do that. You have to leave."
"I won't go until I have my notebook."
Hugo picked up another stone to throw at the window, but the girl grabbed his hand and wrestled the stone from his fingers. She was a little bigger than he was.
"Are you crazy?"
she whispered.
"I can't get caught out here with you. Why do you need your notebook back so badly?"
"I can't tell you."
Hugo tried to pick up another stone, but the girl pushed him to the ground and held him there.
"Listen to me. I can't let you into the building, but I promise I'll make sure he doesn't burn your notebook. Go back to the toy booth tomorrow and ask him for your notebook again."
Hugo looked up into the girl's big, dark eyes and realized that he didn't have a choice. She let him stand up, and he ran off into the snowy night. Chapter 5. Hugo's Father. Hugo ran until he found himself back inside his secret room. He tried to turn on the light, forgetting, as he usually did, that the bulb in the ceiling had burned out. He struck a match, watched it flare, and lit a few candles. The room filled with a warm, golden glow, and huge shadows rose against the walls. Instinctively, Hugo's fingers reached for the empty pocket where his notebook had been. Not knowing what else to do, he walked to a cluttered pile of boxes in the corner of his room and moved them to the side, revealing a hiding place in the wall. Hugo reached in and pulled out a large, heavy object. He untied the frayed ropes and unwrapped the fabric that covered it. The man was 2.5 feet high and built entirely out of clockworks and fine machinery. From the very first moment his father had told him about it, the mechanical man had become the center of Hugo's life. Hugo's father had owned a clock shop and worked part-time in an old museum taking care of the clocks there. One evening, he had come home later than usual.
"Captain," he had said to Hugo, who was already in bed. "Sorry I'm so late, but I found something fascinating tonight at the museum, in the attic. Apparently no one at the museum knows how it got there. Even the old guard doesn't remember. But then again, he doesn't remember very much of anything. It's the most beautiful, complicated machine I've ever seen. It's a shame the museum didn't take care of it."
"What is it?" Hugo asked.
"An automaton."
"What's that?"
"It's a wind-up figure, like a music box or a toy, except it's infinitely more complicated. I've seen a few before, a singing bird in a cage and a mechanical acrobat on a trapeze, but this one is far more complex and interesting than those."
"What do you mean?" said Hugo eagerly.
"This one can write. At least, I think it can. It's got a pen in its hand and it's sitting at a desk. I looked inside it and there are hundreds of little parts, including dozens of wheels that have edges cut with notches and grooves. I'm sure that if it were working, you could wind it up, put a piece of paper on the desk, and all those little parts would engage and cause the arm to move in such a way that it would write out some kind of note. Maybe it would write a poem or a riddle, but it's too broken and rusty to do much of anything now."
"Who made it?" Hugo asked.
"No one at the museum knows, but the other automata I've seen were all built by magicians for use in their performances."
"Magicians?" asked Hugo excitedly.
"Some magicians started off as clockmakers. They used their knowledge of machines to build these automata to amaze their audiences. The sole purpose of the machines was to fill people with wonder, and they succeeded. No one in the audience could figure out how these mysterious figures danced or wrote or sang. It was as if the magicians had created artificial life, but the secret was always in the clockworks."
"You're a clockmaker," said Hugo. "So you should be able to fix it."
"I don't know about that. It's pretty badly rusted and pieces are missing. And I've got enough other things to fix." Hugo was good with clocks, too. The talent ran in the family. Hugo's father had always brought home broken clocks for his son to play with, and by the time he was 6, Hugo was able to fix just about anything. Later, when he visited his father at his clock shop, Hugo watched him carefully. Then, when he grew restless, he made little mechanical animals out of the extra bits and pieces lying around. Hugo's father displayed the creatures proudly on his workbench.
"Can I see the automaton?" Hugo asked. "Please?"
A few nights later, Hugo's father snuck him into the museum attic. In the dusty light, Hugo saw broken model ships and heads of statues and old signs and piles of shattered doors. There were glass jars filled with strange liquids and stuffed birds and cats frozen mid-leap on a wooden stand. At last, his father lifted a stained white sheet, and there it was. The mechanical man. Hugo knew even then he would never forget the first time he saw it. The machine was so intricate, so complicated, that he almost got dizzy looking at it. Even in its sad state of disrepair, it was beautiful.
"You can fix it," Hugo whispered. "Don't you want to know what it can write? Then we'll wind it up and see what the message says."
"We'll see if I can get through my workload of broken clocks in the shop and at the museum, Hugo," said his father. But even as he worked in his shop, Hugo's father must have kept thinking about the automaton. Soon, Hugo's father had filled several notebooks with drawings of the automaton. He opened the automaton up and carefully disassembled it. He drew detailed pictures of all its parts, then he cleaned them and patiently began to put it all back together. On Hugo's birthday, his father took him to the movies as he usually did, and he gave him one of the notebooks as a present. Meanwhile, Hugo's father grew obsessed with getting the automaton to work. He brought Hugo back to the museum a few more times and explained how the mechanisms operated. They remained optimistic that it could be fixed, and they talked about what the automaton might write once it was working again. Hugo and his father began to think of the automaton as an injured animal that they were nursing back to health. One night, the old guard in the museum forgot that Hugo's father was up in the attic, and he locked the door, trapping him inside. Hugo had no way of knowing what happened next. No one knows how the fire started, but it rushed through the whole building in minutes. Hugo stayed up all night waiting for his father to come home. He had never been this late before. But when the door finally opened in the morning, it wasn't father. It was Uncle Claude.
"Pack your things quickly, nephew," Uncle Claude said, his breath smelling of alcohol as usual.
Uncle Claude lifted his tiny steel spectacles with one hand and wiped his bloodshot eyes with the other.
"Your father's dead, and as your only living relative, I'm taking you in."
Hugo, who hadn't slept all night, barely understood what his uncle was saying. He remembered hearing the blood beating hard in his ears like the rhythm of a clock. In a trance, he put his clothes into a little suitcase, packed some of his tools and his deck of cards. He slipped his father's little cardboard notebook into his pocket. As they walked through the freezing streets of the city, his uncle explained about the fire and the locked door. Hugo wanted to fall over, to just lie down on the sidewalk and disappear. This was all his fault. He had wanted his father to fix the machine, and now, because of him, his father was dead.
"You'll be my apprentice," he vaguely heard his uncle saying as they walked. "You'll live in the station with me, and I'll show you how to take care of the clocks. Apprentice timekeeper, it's a good title for a boy. And besides, I'm getting too old to be climbing through the walls."
A million questions floated through the fog in Hugo's mind, but the only one that he finally said out loud was, "What about school?" Hugo's hand was still wrapped around the notebook in his pocket, and absentmindedly, he began to rub the cover with his forefinger. His uncle laughed.
"Nephew, you're lucky. You are finished with school. There won't be time for it once you're in the walls of the station. You should thank me."
Uncle Claude slapped Hugo on the back and said,
"You come from a long line of horologists. Your father would be proud. Now hurry up."
Uncle Claude cleared his throat. He reached into his pocket, took out a greasy silver flask, and drank from it. The word horologist had been painted on the door of Father's shop. Hugo knew it meant clockmaker, and he had always thought he would be a clockmaker like his father. But after the discovery of the automaton, Hugo began to have other ideas. He wanted to become a magician. Hugo began to think about running away, but at that moment, as if reading his mind, Uncle Claude grabbed the back of the boy's neck and didn't let go until they reached the train station. And so Hugo began working all day in the dark on the clocks. He had often imagined that his own head was filled with cogs and gears like a machine, and he felt a connection with whatever machinery he touched. He loved learning how the clocks in the station worked, and there was a kind of satisfaction in knowing how to climb through the walls and secretly repair the clocks without anyone seeing him. But there was hardly ever any food to eat, and Uncle Claude yelled at Hugo, rapped his knuckles when he made mistakes, and forced him to sleep on the floor. Uncle Claude taught Hugo how to steal, which Hugo hated more than anything, but sometimes It was the only way to get something to eat. Hugo silently cried himself to sleep most nights, and he dreamed of broken clocks and fires. Soon, Uncle Claude began to disappear for hours at a time, leaving Hugo to take care of the clocks twice each day by himself. Sometimes his uncle didn't return until very late at night, and then, one day, Uncle Claude didn't come back at all. Hugo was afraid that his uncle would track him down if he left, but finally, on the third night that his uncle did not return, he decided to escape. He packed up his things and raced out of the station. He was hungry and tired and had no idea where he would go. He made his way through the narrow city streets, turning blindly, terrified he'd freeze to death before he found shelter. He looked down at his feet as he walked because the wind was bitter, and eventually Hugo found himself quite by accident in front of the ruins of the burned-down museum. All that was left of the building was a jagged brick wall with nothing behind the windows but black sky. The police had put up wooden barriers, but no one had begun to clean up the place. A huge pile of twisted metal, wooden planks, and crumbled bricks lay in front. And then, something in the wreckage caught Hugo's eye. There it was, like an accusation. The broken, burned automaton, reminding Hugo that everything in his life had been destroyed. He sat down and stared at it. A long time passed. Dogs barked in the distance, and the rumblings of the street cleaners pierced the quiet of the night. Where was Hugo supposed to go? What was he supposed to do? He had no one. Even the automaton was dead. He gathered up his few belongings and walked away, but he kept looking back at the ruined machine, and for some reason, he couldn't leave it there. After all of his father's hard work, the automaton belonged to him. Hugo took a deep breath, went back, and cleared away the charred debris. The automaton was heavy and in several pieces, but he picked it up and, not having anywhere else to go, returned to the dreaded station. It was a difficult trip back, with his belongings slung over his shoulder and the blackened, twisted remains of the automaton straining his arms and back. He didn't even know what he was going to do with this thing once he got it back to his room. Since it was late at night, he managed to drop it inside one of the air vents without anyone seeing him. It took several trips through the walls to get it all back to his room. When he finished, his hands were scratched pretty badly, and his arms and back ached. Hugo laid out all the pieces on the floor and washed his hands in the basin by his bed, which he refilled from the spluttering sink in his tiny kitchen. He stared at the misshapen pieces of metal and was thankful that his uncle still hadn't returned. Fix it. Hugo could have sworn he heard a voice whispering in his ear, and he jumped. He looked for his uncle, but the room was empty. Hugo didn't know if it was his own thoughts or if it was a ghost, but he had heard it clearly. Fix it. Looking at the automaton, Hugo didn't think he'd be able to do it. It was in far worse shape than before. But he still had his father's little notebook. Maybe he could use his father's drawings as a guide to rebuild the missing parts. Increasingly, Hugo felt like he had to try. If he fixed it, at least he wouldn't be so completely alone. Hugo knew it would be dangerous to stay at the train station. His uncle could come back, and in the meantime, he was sure that if the station inspector knew he was there alone, he'd be locked up in that little jail cell in the office, and then sent off to the orphanage. Then, the automaton would probably be thrown away, or destroyed. Hugo quickly realized he had to make it seem like his uncle was still around. He would keep the clocks running as precisely as possible, and he'd take his uncle's paychecks from the office when no one was looking, although he didn't know how to cash them. Most of all, Hugo would do his best to remain invisible. 3 months had passed since then. Hugo ran his fingers along the arm of the automaton and gazed at its face. He had studied the drawings in his father's notebook closely and had made great progress. He had repainted the face himself, and it had the strangest expression. It reminded him of father, the way he always seemed to be thinking of three things at once. The newly polished wooden hand was now poised above the desk as it once was, waiting for Hugo to make it a new pen. Hugo had continued thinking about the note that it would eventually write, and the more he worked on the automaton, the more he came to believe something that he knew was completely crazy. Hugo felt sure that the note was going to answer all his questions and tell him what to do now that he was alone. The note was going to save his life. Whenever he imagined the note, he always saw it in his father's handwriting. Maybe father, while he had been working on the automaton up in the attic of the museum, had changed the little mechanical parts just enough so that it would make a new note, one meant just for Hugo. It was possible, after all. Now he just had to get the notebook back from the old man so he could finish his work and read the message from his father. Chapter 6. Ashes. The next day, at the crack of dawn, the old man was opening his toy booth when Hugo approached.
"I thought I might see you today," said the old man as he turned toward Hugo.
He reached into his pocket and removed a tied-up handkerchief and held it out. Hugo's eyes widened hopefully, but as soon as he took the handkerchief, he understood what he had been given. His breath caught in his throat, and tears began to form in his eyes as he undid the knot. Hugo touched the ashes and then let them fall to the floor with the handkerchief. He staggered backward. All of his plans, all of his dreams disappeared in that scattered pile of ash. Hugo charged at the old man, but the old man was quick and caught his arms.
"What is your attachment to this notebook?"
he demanded as he shook Hugo.
"Why won't you tell me?"
Hugo was sobbing. As he tried to release himself from the old man, he noticed something strange. The old man seemed to have tears in his eyes, too. Why in the world would he be crying?
"Go away,"
the old man whispered, letting go of Hugo.
"Please, just go away. It's over."
Hugo wiped his eyes with his dirty, ashen hands, leaving long black smudges across his face. He turned around and ran off as fast as he could. Hugo was exhausted, but it was time to check the clocks again. For a moment, he considered giving himself up. He'd never get the message from the automaton now, so he might as well turn himself in to the station inspector and be sent to the orphanage. At least there he wouldn't have to steal food and worry about the clocks breaking down. But the thought of losing the mechanical man was too much to bear. He had grown to love it. He felt responsible for it. Even if it didn't work, at least at the train station, he had it nearby. Hugo set to work on the clocks, but no matter how he tried to distract himself, he kept seeing the handkerchief filled with ashes. He was angry with the old man, and he would never forgive the girl for lying to him. At the end of the day, Hugo put down his bucket of tools and sat next to the clock he had been checking. He placed the railroad watch in the bucket, pulled his knees up to his chin, and held his head in his hands. The steady rhythm of the clock lulled Hugo to sleep, but he dreamed of fire and woke up with a start. Frustrated and sad, and finished with the clocks, he finally returned to his room and tried to sleep. But his mind wouldn't stop spinning, and so he reached for a scrap of paper and a pencil from one of the boxes near his bed. He sat down on the floor and drew pictures of clocks and gears, imaginary machines and magicians on stage. He drew the automaton over and over and over again. He kept drawing until his mind calmed down. Then he slipped the drawings underneath his bed onto the big pile of other drawings he had done and climbed, fully dressed, into bed. Morning came, and the clocks were waiting, as always. After Hugo had finished his rounds, he washed his face and hands in his basin. He was thirsty and longed for a hot cup of coffee. It was impossible to steal coffee since someone had to pour it, so he searched through his jars and came up with a few coins. Hugo bought himself the coffee and sat for a moment at one of the empty cafe tables. He preferred to pay for what he could with the coins that he found each week, and he tried not to steal anything he thought people needed. He took clothes from the lost and found and scavenged the garbage for day-old bread. Sometimes he allowed himself to steal fresh bottles of milk or pastries when they were left outside the cafe early in the morning, as his uncle had shown him. The toys, of course, had been an obvious exception to his rule. The coffee was hot, and as Hugo let it cool, he looked around the cavernous station at all the people rushing by with a thousand different places to go. When he saw them from above, he always thought the travelers looked like cogs in an intricate, swirling machine. But up close, amid the bustle and the stampede, everything just seemed noisy and disconnected. When Hugo picked up his coffee again, he noticed that a folded-up piece of paper had appeared on the table. He looked around, but there was no one near enough to have left it. Slowly, he unfolded the paper. It read, "Meet me at the bookseller's on the other side of the train station." That was all. But then Hugo turned the paper over. There was one more sentence. "Your notebook wasn't burned." Chapter 7 Secrets. Hugo had never been inside the bookstore before, but of course he knew exactly where it was. He knew every inch of the train station. Opposite the cafe, not far from the main waiting room, there were two wooden tables covered in books flanking a door that read, "R. Labisse, Bookseller, New and Used." Hugo stepped inside the store. He was rubbing the buttons on his jacket, and one came off in his hand. He slipped it into his pocket where he continued to rub it. His heart was pounding. The place smelled of old paper, dust, and cinnamon. It reminded him of school, and a brief flash of his old life pleasantly filled his memory. His best friends, Antoine and Louis, both had black hair and liked to pretend they were brothers. Hugo hadn't thought about them in a while. The taller of the two boys, Antoine, used to call Hugo Tick-Tock because he always had clockworks in his pockets. Hugo wondered about them. Did they still pretend they were brothers? Did they miss him? Hugo also remembered that sometimes at night, Father would read to him from amazing adventure stories by Jules Verne and a collection of Hans Christian Andersen's fairy tales, which were Hugo's favorites. He missed being read to. A clerk sat at the desk between two tall piles of encyclopedias. Hugo looked around. At first, he didn't see anyone else in the shop, but then, like a mermaid rising from an ocean of paper, the girl emerged across the room. She closed the book she had been reading and motioned for Hugo to come over.
"Papa George still has your notebook. How do I know you're not lying? You lied before."
"I didn't lie. He's tricking you."
"Why are you telling me this? Why do you want to help me?"
The girl thought for a moment.
"I want to see what's in your notebook."
"You can't. That's a secret," said Hugo.
"Good. I like secrets."
Hugo thought she was a very strange girl. She called to the clerk sitting at the back of the store,
"Monsieur Labisse, I'm taking the book on photography. I'll bring it back soon."
Yes, yes, fine, fine, he said distractedly as she left the bookshop without looking back at Hugo. Part of Hugo did not believe the girl. Maybe she was playing a trick on him. But since he had nothing to lose, he marched over to the toy booth and waited until the old man was finished with his customers. The cogs and gears in his head were spinning out of control.
What are you doing here?
Asked the old man. Hugo took a deep breath.
I don't believe you burned my notebook.
You don't?
The old man seemed surprised. He thought about it for a few moments and said,
Well, I don't really care. Maybe you're right. Maybe those were not the ashes of your notebook. But you won't ever find out, will you?
Hugo inched closer to the booth. The old man calmly straightened the toys on the counter and said to the boy,
You should not have returned here, Hugo Cabret. Now go away.
But later, alone in his room and thinking about the broken automaton while he scurried through the walls fixing the clocks, Hugo convinced himself he had to keep trying. He returned to the toy booth the next day and the day after that. At night, new drawings accumulated beneath his bed. Finally, on the third day, the old man came at him with a broomstick. Hugo flinched, thinking that the old man was going to hit him, but instead, he raised the handle toward Hugo and said,
Be useful.
Hugo took the broom and began to sweep the floor around the booth. The old man watched carefully. When Hugo finished sweeping, he handed the broom back to the old man.
Now give me my notebook.
The old man coughed and reached into his pocket. He pulled out some change.
Go buy me a croissant and a coffee, unless you're going to steal my coins, too.
Hugo happily grabbed the change and returned quickly with two croissants and two coffees. They ate and drank in silence. When they finished, the old man got up from the bench they were sitting on, went behind the counter, and found the remains of the little blue wind-up mouse that Hugo had stepped on when he was caught stealing from the booth. The old man laid the crushed pieces on the counter and said,
Fix it.
Hugo just stared at the old man.
I said, fix it, he repeated.
I need my tools, Hugo said.
The old man took out a small canister of tiny screwdrivers, pliers, files, and brass hammers.
Use these.
Hugo hesitated for a moment, but then set to work. The mouse skittered noisily across the counter.
So I was right about you, said the old man. You've got some talent. Now will you tell me why you came to me? Will you tell me about the drawings in your notebook?
Give it to me first, said the boy.
The old man exhaled.
If I didn't burn your notebook, there's only one way I would even consider giving it back to you. Children like you are not worth the rags you wear, but most children like you would have disappeared completely after being caught. And most children like you aren't so good with mechanical things. Maybe you will prove that there is more to you than being a thief. Perhaps you can earn back your notebook. But remember, you are gambling with your time. Because you might work for me for months and months only to find out that you were wrong about the notebook. There's a chance it's already gone. That's the risk you'll have to take. You'll come to the booth every day. I will decide how long you must work for each of the items you stole, and it will be up to me to decide when you have earned back your notebook, if it still exists. Do you understand?
I already have a job, Hugo said.
The old man laughed.
Thief is not a job title, boy.
I have another job, but I'll come here when I can.
You begin tomorrow, said the old man,
and Hugo ran off down the empty hallway, careful not to click his shoe heels on the stone floor. This wasn't the perfect plan, but for Hugo, at least, it was a start. Chapter 8. Cards. After making his morning rounds with the clocks, Hugo showed up at the toy booth the next day prepared to work. He could feel the cogs and wheels in his head spinning in different directions. One moment, he felt hopeful that he'd get his notebook back. The next, he felt angry and resentful. But he did his work. He swept the floor and organized the small boxes behind the counter. He untangled the wires of the flapping birds and repainted the chipped toys. He fixed the mechanical creatures that had stopped working. Hugo found himself surrounded by more mechanical parts than he ever could have imagined. Everywhere he looked, there were buckets of loose metal bits, tiny motors, gears, springs, nuts, bolts, and brightly colored tin. Hugo knew he shouldn't steal anything else, but looking at all these pieces was just too tempting. If he did get his notebook back, he would need more parts. He rubbed the buttons on his jacket and deftly pocketed the tiny mechanisms he wanted. While Hugo worked, the old man played cards. A long time ago, Hugo's father had taught him how to play solitaire, and he used to entertain Hugo with a few card tricks. Hugo hadn't thought about that in a long time. As he watched the old man play, he saw things that captivated him. The old man didn't just shuffle the deck. He fanned it and flipped it and made the cards jump up into an arching bridge, shooting them in rapid succession from one hand to the other. He could cut the deck with one hand and make a second fan of cards appear behind the first. He even made a card float up by itself and then lower into the deck again. How could such a mean old man do such amazing things? The next time Hugo came to work, he brought his deck of cards. After he had nearly finished his chores, he boldly went over to the old man and set it down. "Show me how you do that with the cards."
"How I do what? Play solitaire?"
"How you make the cards fan out like that and float."
"Was I doing that?" the old man asked. "I wasn't paying attention. Now go work before I lose my patience."
Hugo didn't move. The old man hesitated. He squinted at the boy with one eye, then picked up his cards and fanned them out in his hand again. He made them dance and rise and float. Hugo stood staring in delight until the old man's voice shook him out of his trance.
"Enough. Go work."
But throughout the day, Hugo stole glances at the old man, who continued to do amazing things with the cards. Sometimes Hugo caught his eye and got the distinct impression that the old man wanted him to see what he was doing, as though the old man was performing for him. Eventually, the old man fell asleep again, and Hugo felt a tap on his shoulder. He turned and saw the girl with a bright red book under one arm. She put a finger to her lips.
"Meet me at the bookstore in 10 minutes, she whispered. "Papa George doesn't want me here."
Then she slipped behind benches and columns and disappeared down the hallway.
"I started looking for your notebook," the girl said when Hugo appeared. "You better not look inside. If I find it, I should at least be able to look at it."
"Then don't look for it,"
Hugo glared at her.
"I'm trying to help you. Why are you being so mean?"
Hugo blinked.
He had never thought of himself as mean before. The old man was mean, not him. Hugo had no choice. He had to keep secrets, but he couldn't explain this to the girl.
She was standing there with her hands on her hips, looking at him with an expression he couldn't quite place. She looked very grown up, like she was disappointed in him, and for a brief moment, quite unexpectedly, his heart sank. Hugo looked away from her and put his hands in his pockets.
"Just promise me you won't open it," he said.
"Fine."
She sounded angry, but then she added,
"If it falls open and I have to pick it up, I'm not going to close my eyes."
And a young man with a black eye patch entered.
"Etienne!"
the girl said. Hello, Isabel, the young man said.
So, her name was Isabel, thought Hugo.
I haven't seen you in a while. How are things at the toy booth?
Fine, said Isabel. She motioned toward Hugo and said, This is my friend, Hugo.
Etienne smiled and took Hugo's hand.
Etienne works at the movie theater near my home. He sneaks me in because Papa George won't allow me to see any movies.
I always take pity on people who love the movies. I can't help it. Do you like the movies, Hugo?
My father always took me to the movies for my birthday, he answered. What did you see? Asked Isabel.
Hugo looked at both of them.
He thought about the times he had gone to the movies with father and how much they had loved being together in the darkness of the cinema.
Finally, Hugo answered Isabel's question.
My last birthday we saw a movie with a man hanging from the arms of a giant clock. Oh, that's a good one. It's called Safety Last, said Isabel, starring Harold Lloyd.
I'm leaving town for a few days to visit my family, said Etienne. But come by the movie theater next week when I'm back. I'll be working on Tuesday. I'll sneak you both in.
I can't, said Hugo.
You must, said Etienne, smiling. Promise you'll come.
I can't do that. Come on, Hugo. Promise, Isabel said.
The idea of going to the movies made Hugo remember something father had once told him about going to the movies when he was just a boy, when the movies were new. Hugo's father had stepped into a dark room, and on a white screen, he had seen a rocket fly right into the eye of the man in the moon. Father said he had never experienced anything like it. It had been like seeing his dreams in the middle of the day.
All right, I promise, said Hugo.
Isabel tucked her new book, Greek Mythology, under her arm and said,
Good, I'll see you then. I've got to go now. There's something I have to look for.
Don't open the notebook,
said Hugo, but Isabel was already headed toward the door.
Goodbye, Etienne,
she called. Then to Hugo,